we are ready to go. Today we are podcasting. We are learning how to make one. We are making one. We are then going back over and figuring out how we did it. And we're going to do it in the form of a workshop on the substance of what we're doing. So first, I want to introduce Colin Rhinesmith. Colin.
Hello, everybody.
Colin, tell us a bit about yourself.
Okay. Hello, everyone. My name is Colin Rhinesmith, and I'm the Digital Media Production Coordinator at the Berkman Center. And I've been podcasting a lot of the events and goings-ons and more exploratory research questions going on at the Berkman Center for the past year through podcasting. It's been audio since I picked it up for Audio Berkman. We're going to show you the site in a second once we get this set up.
And just so that part of the introduction, you connect with CCTV.
That's right. I'm on the board. Cambridge Community Television.
Okay, now start us off. What is a podcast?
Podcasting. It's probably the most...
Go fast, because
misunderstood.
Many of the people here have grown up in the internet generation.
Yes.
And so unlike me, they don't need to start with two. So you go fast at the beginning.
Who knows what a podcast is?
What a podcast is?
Pretty much everybody.
No, I didn't see everybody. Who doesn't know what a podcast is? All right, that's enough to warrant a really good explanation.
Excellent. Well, it's one of the most misunderstood phrases, and because I think a lot of people think they need to have an iPod in order to listen to a podcast or download a podcast or use podcasting. So basically all a podcast is, it's audio or video on a web page that has a web feed. That's it. It's different from a static HTML page where you put an audio video piece of media on a site because it has that feed. That's really the key. That's really the key about it.
The feed is the key.
The feed is the key
for podcasting. In other words, like long ago, I was putting up audio on my website. That is an HTML link. So The Mission is up there and Singapore Hero is up there. But the difference is the RSS feed.
That's right.
And tell us exactly what the feed accomplishes.
The feed allows you to subscribe to the audio or video on a website, meaning that you can, every time there's new content on a blog, say with audio or video, when you subscribe through this feed to a blog, every time there's a new post, you get it delivered to you. So, you know, I mean, iTunes is basically...
No, wait.
Yep.
Blog post, I understand, is text.
Right.
And, okay, the experience of me as a user is I open up my machine, or it's on, and I come to it, and I look to an appropriate place, and there's all these blogs that have been fed to me, and I go through them or not, depending on how I feel.
Right.
But that's not a podcast. How do I, as a user, experience a podcast? There, I get up in the morning, I've showered, I've shaved, I've done my stuff. Now I'm ready for my podcast.
Well, actually, you check your aggregator, which you have all your blogs coming into.
Wait a minute. Check my aggregator.
Yes.
I'm looking around here. I haven't got an aggregator handy.
So, right in Firefox, for those of you...
Check my aggregator. Fern, are you okay?
Firefox web browser is an aggregator. And, for example... I think the best way to do it is to look at iTunes. Are there a lot of people on iTunes that listen to music, that download videos, whether you have an iPod or not? These are podcasts. So what you can do, so very simply, this is Media Berkman. This is the site that I helped to produce at the Berkman Center. And, you know, this is now the universal sign for a feed when you see these buttons here. So if I want to subscribe to the audio, I click on that feed. And this is the feed. This is the podcast. The feed is the podcast because this is what I'm going to be subscribing to. This is the content that every time there's a new post here, it will be delivered to me if I subscribe to the feed using something like iTunes. And I can show you how to subscribe to it. I hope. Subscribe to podcast. There it is. So what I've done is I've copied and pasted this feed. I've grabbed it.
What feed?
This is the feed.
What feed?
This is the podcast.
When I see a page, I see a screen, I see a whole bunch of stuff.
Again, the reason why it is a podcast is it has this play now button showing the audio enclosure. So this is your class. This is the audio from the video that was shot.
I see. So you're going to feed me
right.
The audio from class number 12.
Yes. And so to do that, I grab the feed. I open iTunes.
But why isn't that just downloading it?
Well, you have to have an aggregator like iTunes. So getting back to the word aggregator. You'll see it's actually easier just to show you. So subscribe to podcast. It looks for the feed's address on the internet. There it is. I've copied and pasted it right there. I've hit OK. And there it is. And it's getting the content. It's getting the podcast. It's downloading it to my computer. So again, every time there's a new post with audio on Media Berkman, I go to iTunes, I open it, and there it is. It just automatically downloads.
All right. Now,
wait, let me ask you a question. Clearly, you're being a little bit obstructionist in this demonstration here, and I'm wondering, is the basic difference that we're talking about here, whether it's a push or a pull, in the sense that if it weren't a feed, we would have to individually go to the website every time we wanted to listen to a new lecture and download that particular
right.
thing.
Right.
Whereas if
exactly.
we subscribe to the feed,
mm-hmm.
it's going to just show up every time we open iTunes or whatever our aggregator is
right
in front of us like a menu.
Exactly.
So the thing that you like so much in the Democracy Player, this very nice page that shows us all of our videos, it shows them to you even before you've downloaded without having to go search through our wiki to find the page where they are.
Yes, that's right. But so, okay, that's extremely helpful. That means I've got the audio to this machine that I'm sitting in front of. But then I've got to go through yet another step in order to get it onto the thing that I walk around with, like my iPod.
Right, if you're going to use... Right.
Right.
But that's the important thing, is you don't need an iPod to listen to podcasts.
So does pod and podcast refer to iPods, just for the record?
Yes.
You think?
I think.
Does everybody think that?
Because
I had heard another story.
Help us back
oh,
out
I'm
here.
Sure, I'm sure there is. I am no expert in this area, that's for sure. So
I had thought that pod and podcast stood for something, which maybe I have invented myself, like point of delivery or something like that, that was independent of iPod itself.
I actually had a question which ties along with this as well. It seems like what makes a podcast is just the RSS feed. But getting back to Professor Nesson's point, I guess that's how it differs from just a regular MP3, which you would go to a website, and when you click on the file, you would just download the file, and it would be directly in, let's say, your iTunes library. But
exactly.
because it's formatted in such a way that it needs to go through an RSS feed, you actually get the files through a continuous feed of them, as opposed to just being able to click on a link on a website and listen to it. It's not immediate in the same way as maybe an MP3 posted on a blog would be.
Somebody hears, we're about to do
2.5 minutes. Excuse me. We're about to do a few little exercises. And if somebody took that individually and put it up on a website, we wouldn't call that a podcast.
Right, because the individual file isn't actually a podcast. You could just post that as an MP3.
Right, and people would have to come to it somehow and get it. And right.
Download it to their computer, yeah. I mean,
and what would make it a podcast is putting it into some environment like Audio Berkman that has collected a bunch of things and a bunch of people are taking feeds of the whole thing?
Well,
so
if we set
up part of a program?
Let's say we set up a website. For instance, Audio Berkman does this, but we kept updating every day. We had someone do a different argument or a podcast, we recorded their little argument that they did in front of the class, and then we updated that every day. Then the RSS feed would be updated with those new audio files.
Let's just imagine that we have 50 2.5 minute brilliant pieces of audio. If we were to pass them out one a day so that we had a program that had an identifiable quality to it over time where it would make sense to feed it as opposed to just dump it, then we would be podcasting.
Right, exactly.
So somehow the podcast has to do with crafting the rhetorical framework within which the event from the user's side is perceived. A podcast is something that has a continuous thread that I want to connect with.
In a way, yeah, it's turning things into a continuous nature as opposed to the one point of download, let's say MP3, where you're just getting one file. In a podcast, you're getting maybe once a week a new file or once every day a new update to what you had previously.
Excellent. Okay.
But technically speaking, that's not the case in that we could dump all of those things there
right
now. And the result of it is just that people have to subscribe only once in order to get all of those things instead of having to go and click each of those individual links. And then you can set up your iTunes to automatically download them every time there happens to be a new thing, whether it comes all at once or it comes...
You should be on this.
I think I'm hopefully close enough to Collins, but whether it comes one every day.
Exactly. I think that the benefit of podcasting, though, is that you can keep a continuous stream of new material. I mean, in terms of why it's become so popular, it's because you don't have to keep going back to that page and finding the new files. Instead, it's really passive. Once you download it once or you subscribe to the feed, then you don't have to keep going back and taking that active role of going back to the website every week and checking for updates.
Well,
it just tells you when it's
absolutely
updated.
And a great example of that is when I look at the statistics for the download statistics for Media Berkman, over 50% of the people who listen to podcasts on Media Berkman download them through iTunes because they've gone once, like you said, they've subscribed to it, and they don't go back to the site.
All right, well, I'm eager to move on to the substantive part of this. So, KB, would you be willing to pass?
Okay.
Colin, are you prepared to record a podcast?
Absolutely.
So if someone were to come to the front of the room and speak to us, you could be doing your thing?
Absolutely.
Okay. So who's up first? Mary, you going
to
start us off? Yes. Oh,
because
I don't know.
We're
does
actually
she?
Going to be using the microphone in this computer to record it.
Okay, but I have to look at my computer when I talk. So I'm basically
if you want to bring it up here, we could just
A second. That's already a bad idea. Reading off a computer is not a good idea. It's like standing up in your oral argument with your head in the... It would be better if... I mean, you know it, Mary. Come on up here. No, you don't memorize. Memorizing is not the way you do things. Do you think that the way you're going to be trial lawyers is you're going to memorize your speeches? This is not the way to do it.
But this is probably audio. There's no eye contact involved.
Nonetheless.
I'll read it with feeling. You won't know the difference.
All right, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. You take this microphone.
So we need you to come up, actually, up here. You can bring your computer, and we can record it right here.
All right, well, in that case, let's be doing that and get going.
On another one, can we have a line up here?
Sure.
It's not going to take her a long time just to walk down.
But she got to get her... Actually, that's right. She doesn't have to hook anything up.
Thank you.
Oh, dueling Max, this is very...
That's cool. Right.
Now, really, Mary, don't read. It's not the way to do it.
So you can let me know when you're ready. Basically, just hit.
Do I need to talk into this, too, or just that?
No, you don't.
No?
No, just talk into that.
Yeah, so the recording will pick you up, actually.
It's
so
complicated.
So why don't you hold that? And as long as you're that should pick you up. And so this is the program that hopefully we'll all be using. This is called Audacity. And all you have to do is open it up and hit the record button, and we're recording.
Okay, so my understanding of the City of Cambridge's policy on towing vehicles that are parked in violation of street cleaning policies is as follows. First of all, clean streets are beautiful. They're generally desirable by the citizenry. Second of all, unclean streets might have a negative impact on the economy and that they might deter tourism and potentially drive down property values, which could affect the public schools' budgets.
No, this is not good. This is not a good podcast.
I don't have inspired
this is not a good podcast.
Prepared. Okay. I have like 10 points written down, and I can't remember any of them. All right.
It's not a matter of points. Here I am. I'm sitting out there. I'm at the Cambridge public gathering, and you're taking the floor, and are about to advocate that we should stop towing cars for street cleaning in Cambridge. And you got a bunch of people who are lounging around, kind of like the way these people are lounging around. You know, they're kind of doing their email or do whatever the hell it is. It's like, so now you got to talk to these people. You got to.
Yes.
I'll say more about who we are, Mary. We're people who like our streets clean. We're good law-abiding citizens who, when it comes to be the last Thursday of the month, we park our car someplace where it doesn't get towed.
No, you're not. You're the citizens of Cambridge. You get towed all the time.
Ah. So now you're going to speak to who we are.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Talk to us. Talk to us. Who are we?
You're all residents of Cambridge. All of you don't have cars, but many of the citizens of Cambridge do have cars. Most of them park their cars on the street. Once a month, if your car is parked on the street, if you leave it there, say, and never use it, it'll get towed once a month. There will be a $70 fine for the towing, all of which will go to the tow company, and a $20 ticket. Also, if you leave your car at the impound lot for more than 24 hours, you'll pay $20 a day for storage costs. So there are several reasons why street cleaning is generally desirable. Clean streets, high property values, flooding becomes an issue if gutters are obscured, several other points which currently elude me. But all of this I admit, and I think that clean streets are generally desirable. The city maintains that towing is the only way to enforce this policy to make it in any way meaningful. There are a lot of signs posted everywhere on each side of the street. There's always a policeman there when your car is towed to ensure that it's done in a law-abiding manner. There are 3 towing companies that are on contract with the city. You can call the Cambridge police. They'll tell you who towed your car and give you the number so that you can call them and get in touch with them. It's a pretty well worked out system. There's a clear process for contesting a tow or complaining. It's posted on the Cambridge government website. And there's no fee for contesting it. Those are points in favor of the policy from the city's perspective. I think, first of all, that the policy of towing is unconstitutional because...
Don't bother me with the Constitution.
I think it's relevant that it's unconstitutional.
I like my streets clean. Give me a good argument.
You should also like your constitution.
Nah, give me a good argument.
Okay, constitutionality notwithstanding, I don't believe that towing is necessary to the enforcement of the policy because I don't think if the street cleaning machine has to go around the odd car that that's going to really impact property values or drains, things like that. And even if it were necessary, I don't believe that the current system is very effective. If you've ever looked at a street cleaning machine go down the street, it's very hard to discern any difference between the before and after. They don't clean the streets for 6 months of the year in Boston, during which time the gutters and everything are totally covered over in ice and snow, and it doesn't seem to be a major disaster or humanitarian crisis. Plenty of cities don't tow. Plenty of cities don't clean their streets. I think also the fact that all $70 goes to the tow company is ridiculous because
you need a wow finish.
I don't have one ready. Does anyone have a wild finish?
So I demand...
Oh, no, I do have a wild finish, kind of. It's a new idea. Thank you. It's basically that if the city got money from tickets instead of the cars being towed, they could get some students at MIT to design a little mini street cleaner that could go between the cars and the sidewalk for not very much money, and nobody would have to move their cars. But I think first and foremost, the constitutional issue is the most important one, and I'm prepared to defend that at length.
All right. Thank you very much, Mary. All right. Now, Colin, show us what you do with this.
Okay. So with the...
First of all, we should say Audacity. You just mentioned it quickly going by. This is an open source program that anyone can download, right?
That's right.
Can we just show, in case it seems confusing to people, how one would get Audacity and whether it's available for Macs and Windows and all that kind of thing?
Does everyone know about this yet?
Nope.
Okay. This has been set up, obviously, for you all. And blogs.law.harvard.edu, CyberOne podcast. And right on the front page, you can access the podcasting tutorial, which is just a link to a page on the wiki, on the CyberOne wiki, with really step-by-step instructions about how to download Audacity, how to install it, and how to use it. And... Sorry? Sure.
Where do we get to
that? Sure.
Where is that?
Where is that?
We need a link to that on our main page.
There is, actually. I go back to... we should just put a link probably right here. But let's see. I can give you the address, or I can...
Why don't you give us the address, and I'll add the link right during class right now.
Okay, great. So again, it's blogs.law.harvard.edu/CyberOnePodcast.
And for all of you who are enrolled in the law school class or the extension school class, you've been signed up already based on the email address that's on our mailing list to be an author of these podcasts. So if you're on that list, you should already have an account. If you get stuck and you can't log in or you don't know what's going on, then you should email me and I will help you make sure that you can get in to upload your podcast.
So from this site, there's a link to the download instructions, installing it. Let me just go straight there. It's pretty simple. I've tried to make it as easy as possible. These are all the steps you need right here, step-by-step instructions. I don't know if you want to go through them right now or people can do that on their own. But they're all here. It's very simple. Download it, install it. And it shows you how, like we just did before, like you saw, you hit record. When you're done, you stop it. And the last step, which I'll show you. But first, I want to find the beginning, the starting point to the argument.
So can you just, maybe you could open another file and just show us when you're in the program, how do you start it recording, and how do you know whether it's successfully recording and that kind of stuff?
Let's see. Yep. So after I open Audacity, I just hit new, like I just did. And again, all you do is just hit record.
So that's that red dot.
Yep, that's that red button. And you can see these are the waveforms. I don't, for people who don't know, those are, that's the actual audio that's being recorded. And you can see the volumes, the levels up there moving. And that's it. Hopefully everybody has a... Everybody should hopefully have a mic right on their laptop or their computer. So when you're done...
All right, so go back to Mary and just take us through the steps and put it up.
Yep. This should be ready to go. This is the play button.
No, you're not. You're the citizens of Cambridge. You get to put it all the time.
So
now
you
can
see
who
you are.
Yeah, okay. Who are we? You're all residents of Cambridge. All of you don't have cars, but...
So this is it. We're going to put it up on the site.
Okay.
The last step is you want to create an MP3 file, because that's really what becomes the podcast in the end. This, again, these instructions are on the site. So if I go to File, Export as MP3... And Mary... We'll just call it Mary. And we'll save it. And then the last step here, this is really important to know, because what we're going to be entering here, and everybody's going to be doing this, is entering the metadata for the podcast. And what that, all that means is that when you open this file up in iTunes, you'll have, you know, the name of the podcast and the date and all the relevant information that you want. That usually shows up as the name of the record and artist and album, you know, all this kind of stuff. So this is actually, this step here will create that information. And we'll see it in the end when we open it in iTunes, this podcast. So saving that. It's just exporting right now as an MP3 file out of Audacity so we can upload it to the blog.
So it looked like you just saved it as a blues genre podcast.
I did. It seemed kind of bluesy to me. So, but there's plenty of options you can choose. I think heavy metal's there. We could have chosen that.
Are they all music genres?
There is a speech setting and an other setting. So I usually go between those two. So,
supposing that I recorded my podcast and I thought it was okay, except that my voice is kind of squeaky, so I want to put some background music under it. Can I do that in Audacity?
You can do that. You can... What you would do is actually... Let's see. CC Mixter is a great site if people want to do that. If they want to download Creative Commons licensed music, samples to use, you can go here and you can search for a piece of audio. You know, you can browse by different categories, acoustic guitar. They have a MP3 file. That great. So I'll put that in the beginning. So I'll save it. Put it on the desktop. And I'll take it. And I'll put it right in the beginning. I actually don't use this program to use multiple tracks, but...
But we could actually put it at the same time as the voice, or can we only put it before or after the voice?
Well, I'm pretty sure you can do multiple tracks. What? How do you add a new track? Do you do it down here? New audio track, new stereo track. There it is. Yes, so import audio. There's the MP3 file on my desktop. And where's it bringing it? Oh, on another stereo track. Ah, thank you. There it is. Thank you. Alrighty. So what I'm doing is I'm lining up the tracks, and you see I'm toggling here between these different tools that allow me to move the tracks around. So if I go to the beginning. Move this a little bit closer. Start it here. And we want to trim up the beginning of that. See, you can get real picky with this stuff, which I usually do.
Okay, well, we don't need to get real picky right now. I just wanted to make sure that we got a sense of the full range of possibilities.
Yes.
For editing these.
No, you're not. You're the citizens of Cambridge. You get
to... So that's that. So I will let me export that again. And this, So when this is done, and the next steps that are on the wiki as well, is it has a link to the Cyber One student podcast and to the login, which is right here. And I'm already logged in. This is what the dashboard looks like, the behind the scenes of the blog. How many people have used a WordPress blog? Are people familiar with this? Some? Not many, though. Okay. So all you need to do to upload it...
So can you just go back and show us how we logged in?
Sure, yeah. I'll sign out. And... So this is what it'll look like then. The login is here. Everybody, did people get email about this blog? Everybody probably should have gotten it. I think there was a couple of email that bounced, but hopefully. So you should definitely contact one of us if you didn't get a login or an email with the information about how to log in. But so you enter your username, password.
Are you, in other words, your username is Cyber One Podcast?
It is.
Is that what all of our usernames should be?
No, I don't believe so.
We're signed in, so I should sign in Nessun with whatever my password
right.
is.
Everybody will have received an email that came from the address crinesmith2 that will tell you what your username is. And if you didn't receive that email, or you're otherwise confused, that's when you should email us. Mm-hmm.
So it'll have that login information. You enter it on that last page that we saw, and it'll take you right here. So when you've gotten this far, you've got your audio file ready to go, your MP3 file ready to upload. All you do is you click this Write tab, because we want to write a new blog post. And we'll just call this Mary's Podcast. Now, to upload the audio file, you can see down here, hopefully everybody can see, down here, let me raise this up, upload. So you just look on your computer for the file, for the MP3 file that you just created in Audacity, which is right here, and you just open it. And the last step is upload to get it on the site. So now that we have it here, it's about to become a podcast. Very exciting. So what we do is I'm just going to type all I'm going to type is download the MP3. That's it. Now what I want to do is I want to link to this audio file so it'll show up on the blog post. So I'm going to select download. This little key right here is, this little icon is for linking. And it will link whatever word you have selected in your post. I know this isn't new to probably a lot of you. In order to get this file, this Mary file from here, linked here, all you want to do is just copy the link like this, copy link location.
So you right-clicked on Mary.mp3
yep.
And chose copy link location.
Yep.
Or on a Mac it was Control-click, I suspect. Mm-hmm.
Copy link location. And then over download, because that's sort of like linking the action that you want to highlight. When you hover over any of these things, it'll tell you what it does. When you get to this one, this is the insert edit link.
That one's the one that looks like a chain.
Yep. So we're going to hit that. And this little pop-up window is going to show up. And it asks you for the URL where this audio file lives on this site. We need to link to it in order for it to show up on the blog. So since we've copied the URL from here, we just paste it in there. And hit insert. And that's it. Last step. Hit publish. Let's see what it looks like. There it is.
So you're saying this is a podcast.
This is a podcast.
But I missed the part where we did the feed and any of that. This just still looks like linking an MP3 on a website to me.
Exactly. Let me just show you, since we see, so that file is linked now. When I chose the word download to try to communicate to somebody that that's where, click on that to take me to the podcast. So when I click on it, so this is the answer to your question, right here. Subscribe to this blog. This is the file. This is essentially the podcast. Because in all this gobbledygook, there is a link right here. All this code right here tells me there's a link to Mary's MP3 file. That's what iTunes reads. and tells iTunes there's a new audio file, there's a new podcast available.
So this is pretty interesting to me because it's something I've been wondering about for a while. If I have text posts on my blog and I have one of these subscribed to this blog and then sometimes I have an MP3 in there, iTunes will just know and it'll only take the ones that have the MP3? Or how does it differentiate between the MP3s and the text?
It's looking for certain enclosures, audio or video, these media enclosures. MP3, MP4 is video. It's looking for this code in order to show up as, to translate it into iTunes.
So the very same RSS feed does text, video, audio, and it's up to the aggregator to figure out which things it's going to listen to?
Correct. So just the last point, since we were, just to bring it kind of full circle, is I grab, so now this is this blog's feed, subscribe to this blog. I copy and paste this, and I put it into iTunes. Just as we did before with Media Berkman, subscribe to this podcast. I replace the Audio Berkman with this one, with the Cyber One podcast. I hit OK. And it's downloading. This. There it is.
Okay, good.
Yeah. But you see, and it's also, the important thing is it's also added the metadata that we added, Mary's podcast, from the blog Cyber One Student Podcast. So that's essentially what we want to get to.
All right. Thank you, Colin.
You're welcome.
So now let's go with...
Now let's go with Martha's Vineyard.
Wait. I'm not ready for that yet.
Okay.
Is that okay? First, two things I want to do first. First of all, I wonder if people have technical questions. And then secondly, I feel like I have all these questions about Mary's topic and the composition of that podcast. I thought we were going to talk about the content. So first of all, does anybody have technical questions about how to do this? I mean, they don't have to be really technical, just like the things that would make you nervous about knowing that you have to go do this yourselves.
Did you say that pretty much every laptop computer already has a microphone in it, so I could just record a podcast on my own computer?
That's correct. Yeah, you don't even need a microphone because it's built in. They do? Great.
Where are they then? Because I have that same question.
So is there some way that you just... does anybody know how, like, on a computer where you can go search to find and have it tell you where your microphone is?
Well, one easy way to know if it's working or not, really, you can just, when you download Audacity and open it and hit record, you should see these bars working if you're just talking right at your computer. And if you don't, then, you know, you have to...
So if you don't see the waveform recording, maybe you check your volume properties, make sure that it's muted or... whether it's muted, and maybe you go in your control panel or your system controls and check out your microphones.
For example, when I go to my system preferences for people who use a Mac, there's a sound preference, and I just go in and I can actually see right there that I'm getting level. So that's one way, simple way to check to see if you need to raise the input volume.
I have two questions. One, do you need to speak in, like, right next to the mic, or if you just... or right in front of it, is that okay?
Actually, proximity does matter. It'll sound better. It'll sound closer if you're, you know, the closer you are. It'll be warmer, more full sounding. The farther away you are, it'll sound, you'll get more room, sort of echo, and you could hear it from Professor Nessen when he was across the room. So, yeah, the closer matters, yeah.
And also, if you try to have background music, can you change it so that it's lower? Because I feel like it was overpowering Mary's voice.
Yep. Yeah, there's individual... Here Here we go. We're talking. Test, test, test. And I'll stop that. And I believe, yeah, so this volume here, can everybody see that? That's the where you see gain. That's bringing the level down. So
it's
each time.
The minus plus slider on the left-hand side of a track.
Yeah, this is it for.
Does the pencil allow you to set level points so you can fade down?
That sounds pretty complicated.
Try the pencil.
So Dean is suggesting some more advanced editing technique, which involves adjusting the volume differently in different parts of a track. Like if you got farther away or closer to your microphone, then maybe you could use this little line drawing and pencil technique. And don't worry too much about that unless you get into it and you're excited about it and you feel like exploring.
It essentially would, yes, it would automate sort of the levels. You could go in and write in the volume of so you don't have to, you know, manually go through and do it. But that's yeah, more advanced. So yes.
How do you delete a part that you don't like? How do you delete?
So,
how do you delete something that you don't like?
Right. So you see here, I have this little bit. There's that.
Test.
Like I don't know what that sound
test,
is.
Test.
It's like some kind of snapping sound. I just want to get rid of that. So with this button up here, this tool that's selected, I just highlight it by clicking, dragging over the area, and then just hit delete. And it's amazing because it just rewrites the sound wave, the sound file, really, really nicely, actually, so you can't tell any edit.
I'm not sure if this is exactly a technical question, but listening to Mary's podcast, it doesn't sound to me like a very good podcast. And no offense to Mary, I understand you were really flustered and under the gun here. What does a good podcast sound like? What is something, how do you make something that people want to listen to, that people are interested in?
Well, that's an excellent, excellent, excellent question, because you can have, well, there are radio stations, right, that podcast, excellent sounding professional recordings that you can subscribe to on the web. That's terrific because that allows people to go anytime and subscribe to these podcasts. I would argue that the advantage of podcasting is its whole distribution method. It's just completely allows the, you know, little guy to be up there with the professional sounding audio recordings. Meaning that content then does really matter. You know, it matters what you're saying, it matters what the quality is, it matters who your audience is, it matters what your argument is. So, to me, a great podcast means what I'm looking for myself, what I value as important, whether it sounds like a professional. You know what I mean? So
I don't actually think that's a question for Colin. I think that's more a question for us. And, in fact, I'm sorry that I went too fast. I think that's the substance of response to what Mary did and the substance of what we will be responding to as we workshop some others. And I'm eager to actually do the workshopping. It's like, I know that this is tough and scary for people who haven't done it, but it's actually pretty straightforward. Audacity is a reasonable program. The help button is up there. You can plug around and you don't have to do anything fancy. I'm sure you can solve that problem. The problems of what makes for a good podcast, what makes for a good argument, that's what I'd like us to really workshop.
While we're talking about that, it seems like one of the major, you know, characteristics of a podcast, probably a defining one, is that they're serial, right? You have numerous episodes over and over again. And I'm wondering how that's going to, I mean, we could do, you know, an argument from each sort of project in the class and have that be a podcast where we had, you know, so it would be the Cyber One podcast like we have, and everybody could do that. But that's not really the same as trying to use a podcast to support our project where we need to have, you know, content that shows up every week or month or, you know, however regularly you do it. And I'm wondering sort of how we're supposed to make use of this kind of serialized technology that takes place over some time to build up a base of people that listen and stuff in, you know, the next 6 weeks or whatever.
So from my perspective for this assignment, I would say you don't need to worry about the serial aspect of it. We've chosen for you guys to do a podcast because for the law students, you've already done a substantial writing assignment. For the extension school students, you've done a substantial wiki assignment that is also text-based. And this is an opportunity to state what your argument is in a short form and to try to use your oral argument skills and to really get your mind around the idea of empathic argument. So you can think of it as just you and your 2.5 minutes of time, and then use exactly the technique of evaluating that Colin suggests. When you listen to it, or when you have your group listen to it, does it have the effect that you want it to have? Is it an effective argument? And so maybe we can take that question up with respect to Mary's podcast, if she's open to being a guinea pig in this fashion, and talk about what would make that podcast really be persuasive. What would we want to change about it if we're seeing this as the first rough draft of this podcast about this towing? And I think we should talk about it substantively, about what's actually we need to figure out in this towing issue, and then also in terms of production values, what needs to be in it for it to be a good podcast.
So I'm not crazy about the idea of the substance of what I said being critiqued by the class for its effectiveness, because I would never do it this way. I mean, I would never do a spontaneous, unscripted podcast without all the data in front of me and things like that. So maybe we could discuss it more in the abstract.
I'd like to make a proposal that we actually give Mary the opportunity to do her podcast the way that Mary would do her podcast, without the aggressive intervention. Would you be willing to try that out, Mary?
Maybe the next person could just do it.
I mean, okay.
I would, but I feel like there were a few people who were going to present today, and maybe they could present.
Fair enough. I think that you've certainly been put through the ringer enough so far in this class. So maybe we can move on to the Martha's Vineyard project and keep these questions in mind as we go through the next podcast. Okay, and we're just going to do a quick tape change while we get set up for that podcast.
Or that one. So. No, it's fine. That's fine, actually. Yeah,
you guys so. Ready?
Good. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're back, and if you could just start by introducing yourself very briefly, and then we'll get going on the podcast.
Okay, so my name is Joel Schellhammer, and my position paper very briefly was on Cape Wind, which is a project to install 130 wind turbines off the coast of Cape Cod in Nantucket Sound. And I grew up on Martha's Vineyard, so that's why I chose this project. And I'm not sure how much substantive commenting we should get into after mine, because I guess I approach this from a different standpoint. I'm less interested in writing out something and then doing that as a podcast than I am in sort of the immediacy of getting up and doing public speaking and having that be the podcast that actually goes up. I think there's probably value to that. But anyway, I'll begin my my little advocacy. So I want to speak to you as a resident of Martha's Vineyard and someone who's grown up there and seen the vineyard change over the last 25 years. The vineyard has recently undergone terrific expansion. It used to be sort of a sleepy place where very few people went to vacation. But over the past 10 years with President Clinton coming there, things have changed. The open spaces that were once there are now being filled with tourist homes. The amount of energy that people need to supply the homes and the tourist industry has grown. It used to be that you could look out over Nantucket Sound and see beautiful, clear sky, but that has now changed. And the problems with development need a solution. So what I want to talk to you about today is what sort of solution we should have. And in particular, the Cape Wind project is something that I think we need to discuss. Now, Cape Wind has proposed an original and neat idea. They want to install 130 wind turbines off the coast of Nantucket to harness the power of the wind and produce 420 megawatts of electricity. And that's good. They're trying to solve the problem, and I think we need to listen to them and use what they put forward as something we can take as a springboard to future improvement. But the problem is there are some significant issues with their problem, with their solution. And I want to go through those very quickly for you. The first is the environmental impact. Now, Cape Wind says that there isn't going to be a big environmental impact, that the benefits from using this clean, renewable energy outweigh any particular impact that it might have on the environment. But that's simply not the case. The Nantucket Sound area is a flyaway of migratory birds. So it would disrupt about 500,000 birds that pass through that area. There are oil tankers that come back and forth between the Vineyard and Nantucket, and this would be right in the middle of their route. So the possibility of a collision is now much higher. And finally, this is a sacrifice of our natural resources and how people use the Sound, because if you're putting 130 giant wind turbines in the Sound, that's obviously going to change how people use it. Safety is another issue I think we need to consider. As boats are navigating through this area, as planes are flying over and the drafts are changed because of these wind turbines, as access is restricted in Europe where these parts are common, or where these parks are common, access has always been restricted. Now, Cape Wind says it isn't going to happen, but I don't think that's the case. And finally, simply, I think we need to look at the economics. We're simply paying a developer to make money here off our natural resources. The savings to people on the Cape and Islands will result in about 10 cents a year in terms of electricity cost. And the impact we have on tourism is simply unknown. Do tourists want to look out on 130 industrial wind turbines, or do they want to see an open Sound and see birds in nature? I think it's probably the latter. So finally, I think these risks are too great. Cape Wind is right that we have a problem and that we need a solution, but we need to explore how technology might allow us to place a similar park in deep water areas off the coast where it wouldn't impact in the same way. Thanks.
So I have some questions, Joel. Who were you empathizing with?
I was empathizing with the people who do not want Cape Wind to be there.
Yeah, that is, that's who you are.
No, I do not want Cape Wind to be there. So I guess I'm empathizing with the people who want Cape Wind to be there in the first place.
And how were you empathizing with them?
I think I wanted to point out that they're right, that there's a problem, and that we need an effective solution. But I want to argue with them about what the effective solution is to that problem.
Suppose you had approached it the way Eminem approached the final battle in 8 Mile. How would your approach have been different?
It would have involved a lot more swear words.
That's true.
Maybe a little more angry rhetoric.
But what's the equivalent of, I live in a trailer camp, and my friend does this, and my mom does that?
Well, coming from Martha's Vineyard, it's a little hard to say you live in a trailer camp. But I think...
How about
what I tried to capture was by being a resident, by being someone who's grown up there, to get some traction in terms of the people who this is going to impact.
But more directly, the question is, where are the weak points in your argument? What would the person who is in favor of Cape Wind be jumping up and down with their hand raised in the air when they hear this version of things?
I think that they're going to argue with me over the specific points that I elucidated on what the problems are here. And they're going to argue that the environmental impact isn't as big or that the economic impact is not as...
We'll argue if you want an argument. But we're not agreeing with you because we see you as one of those rich people up on the hill like Teddy Kennedy who doesn't want their view disturbed. And you're not telling us that that's who you are. You're trying to tell us a whole bunch of arguments that are supposed to convince us. But we know what you want. You want your view not to be disturbed.
I think in refocusing the argument to point out that there is a problem, but that this is not the correct solution, you might sidestep the point that you're trying to bring across, which is casting me in the light of being someone who just doesn't want their view destroyed. If that was truly the issue, though maybe I'm just a wolf in sheep's clothing, I wouldn't care about other possible solutions or that admit that there actually is a problem because it's an easier route for me to my argument to say there is no problem and why would we be taking all this trouble in the first place.
But I know what your solution is. It's to put those wind turbines in Fall River, which I think is the other proposal. And if I'm a person who lives in Fall River, which is not a scenic community and it's not an affluent community, then I do feel somewhat this way. Like, why do the rich people in Martha's Vineyard get to have the undisturbed view while we get all of the industrial projects in our area?
Right, and I don't think that's an equitable solution either, and it would not be one that I'm advocating. My advocation is that we need to explore new technology that will allow us to place these turbines in deep water facilities where they're going to be, you know, 50 to 100 miles offshore where no one's going to see them.
But, Joel, I'm trying to make the empathic point. The empathic point is that you're trying to move someone emotionally. In order to do it, they have to develop some identification with you, which means that they have to see you exposing yourself. If you are, in fact, a rich guy with your house on the hill that likes the view, you got to say that. You got to get past that. You don't hide that or sidestep it. You never will join unless you present who you truly are in some sense and go from there. Once you do that, then they say, all right, I'll listen to this guy. He tells me exactly who he is, and he's going to tell me exactly why. And maybe I'll be persuaded, maybe not. But until you get to that point, it's just arguments. It's just right. Dueling back and forth.
I mean, the problem is that I'm not that individual. You know, my parents are not rich. I live in Martha's Vineyard. But the year-round population of Martha's Vineyard has lower income than the rest of the state. So maybe if I was really speaking to a crowd of people on Martha's Vineyard and I said I live there year-round, they would logically, well, first, they would know me. And second, they would assume that I am one of them in terms of having low income and being dependent upon a tourist economy to make ends meet. So maybe I assume
that
in my argument.
All right, well, that's beginning to get to it. But what I'm trying to say is not really about Martha's Vineyard at all. It's about making the step that Eminem makes loudly and with a whole lot of swear words. It's what the lawyer does when he puts a witness on direct. He doesn't leave anything for the cross-examiner. He deals with whatever the cross-examiner is going to come in on by dealing with it first and putting in a frame where, at the end of it, you got nothing left to say. Right? And then you say your piece.
But what I heard Joel coming with was a statement of an understanding of who the audience is that he's speaking to and what they're going to know about him. And that was something that also came up in Mary's podcast in terms of speaking to the audience of Cambridge residents. I mean, it's very striking in the Cambridge resident situation. I hate getting my car towed at street cleaning here, but I immediately start feeling all of these reasons why maybe it still makes sense for it to be there, and it really helps to have the person let you know that they know who you are just as much as letting them know who they are.
Great. Thank you, Joel. Other comments, thoughts? So let's charge ahead.
Wait, I just want to do a little bit more on this. So we've got this podcast. We just recorded it, but the questions that you guys were asking, the technical questions, basically give evidence of a sensitivity to what Quan Bull was bringing up, which is that it's not just a matter of recording it and then putting that thing up there just the way that it is, that you may be interested then in listening to it and figuring out how you want to edit it. Where should it start? Where should it end? Are there parts that you want to take out? And I don't know, maybe it's just a matter of raising it and we have nothing to say about it, but I at least wanted to throw this out there in terms of people thinking about what you might go ahead and do after having recorded a podcast like this in terms of getting it ready to put up. I mean, right now we're just going to put it right up in this raw form, but maybe that's not what we want.
Well, I mean, it seems like part of the beauty of this is, you know, you can give the speech, and it might be a straightforward, non-empathic speech. This is why we should do this, this, and this. And then, you know, Professor Nesson says, well, you know, why don't you account for where you're coming from and things? And, you know, you can record a thing to put at the beginning that says, you know, that says exactly that. Look, I live on Martha's Vineyard year-round, and, you know, I know maybe you think that means I'm just this rich guy who wants to have, you know, my unspoiled views, but really here's where I'm coming from, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you can deal with the kind of substantive or argument kind of stuff more easily because we have, you know, the technology to put stuff in ahead of time or afterwards or whatever to change the actual form of the argument around. So, yeah, we have this sort of raw stuff, but you can always add more to it if you need to.
So let's keep the camera on Colin putting this up so that people watching the video later can sort of get the tutorial reinforcement while we continue to do comments on this?
Well, I was going to follow on your question with a question about the sort of mode of empathic argument. So, Charlie, in the example that you showed with Eminem, he's obviously saying, this is what you're all thinking, this is the opposite point of view, but he's proving his point, which is that he's a great rapper, through the mode of what he's doing. I think it's a little bit different, or it's harder to see how you can do that in every case, because you're right, there's some point where you want to say, yeah, I understand what you're saying, I can see that argument, and I can see how it is compelling, but then somehow turn it, right? And it's that moment of the turn that is a little bit harder to think about in a case where, unlike Eminem, he's demonstrating his prowess and his argument just even in the mode of what he's doing. I'm wondering, am I understanding that right?
I think yes, and when I find myself in those situations, I'm looking for something that would warrant change. That is, some change in the environment or in the problem set or the context that, although I recognize the legitimacy of where the opponent is, I can then say, because of this change in environment, you should consider such and such, or basically that's what I'm looking for. So like with the Stewart piece yesterday, I'm thinking, well, he makes this statement in 2005, but his circumstances changed, and it was right for him then. If this is right for him now, he's going to have to recognize that there's been some change that makes it right. And so that's what I'm trying to present. The argument with the women's movement I was trying to make was not that the women's movement was wrong to focus on rape and make it this all-encompassing thing and to work against a confrontation process to allow hearsay proof, but rather that in the present context, things have changed since the time when that was the right move to make. And now the battlefield is different and calls for a different approach. So that's the kind of thing that I find myself looking for. But it's exactly the problem you're saying. The turn is definitely significant.
So I was delighted to see that Mary preferred script and Joel preferred impromptu public speaking. I wonder if people have any thoughts about whether it makes a difference which one of those you choose in terms of the quality of your podcast and what kind of effect that has on the podcast.
I think that regardless of which one you choose, you should do it in such a way that you're delivering it to somebody one-on-one, because the way that the person will be listening to the podcast will be, it's just you and them. You know, they're not sitting in a room with a lot of people. So public speaking techniques that you've learned to broadcast to like a large group of people may not be so effective. So if it's impromptu, you know, make it seem like a conversation between you and a friend. And if it's scripted, you know, really deliver the lines to like that one specific person, because otherwise if they feel like they're just hearing it as a large group, then it's not as effective.
It's a beautiful observation. Very insightful. Anybody else have thoughts on this?
I think Christina was starting to get a little bit close to what I was trying to get at earlier. I was thinking about what it is that I was trying to say, and I think I can formulate it better. Even though Joel did a lovely piece of rhetoric, not quite so on the spot, even though it succeeds as rhetoric, as I also think that Mary's piece succeeds at rhetoric, I don't think either one really succeeds as a podcast, and I think I just now figured out why, which is that, I mean, if I'm the recipient of the podcast, yes, I want it one-on-one, but even more importantly, I want to know right away why I should keep listening. Because otherwise, I click, and I hear all of this talking without any context. I click it off. I move on to the next one. I think what was really missing with both of these was the hook, which Joel eventually got to when he started talking about all the problems that needs to be addressed. But you know, in the internet age, I think you need to get to it right away. I think you need to begin exactly with the hook, say, we got a problem, this is what it is, and lay it out right from the beginning exactly why people should listen to what you have to say.
These are 2.5 minutes. How short is our attention span? How long do we have to get the hook out there? 6 seconds. 3 seconds. Very, very short. All right, with that in mind, maybe we should move on to the next podcast. Okay, let's take it right here.
Okay.
Start by introducing yourself, and then you go to it. But come up front, because this microphone in your hand is recording for the video, and the microphone on the computer is recording for the podcast.
Got it.
Just so everybody recalls, the reason I'm running around with this microphone is so that everybody who watches this on the video does hear
what we're saying in here.
Sorry. Sarah, what's your name?
Aaron.
Aaron.
Yeah.
Go ahead and introduce yourself, Aaron.
Okay, I'm Aaron Sokoloff, 2L. Ready to go?
How to put sums it up,
okay.
I guess.
Sort of. Yeah, as far as anyways concerned. Okay. I'm Aaron Sokoloff, and other than being a 2L, I am someone who, like millions of Americans, like to waste a tremendous amount of time following sports. I watch a fair amount of it on TV. I surf a lot at ESPN.com and hometown newspapers and some chat sites. And one thing that I enjoy, other than just, watching, individual games and following what's going on, is that I like reading sports commentary, hearing, good, intelligent columnists kind of reflect on what's happened, either kind of a World Series postmortem and wondering, are the 2006 Cardinals, in fact, the worst team ever to win a World Series? And, why were there those really bizarre Chevrolet commercials showing images of Hurricane Katrina and kind of reflecting on these issues in kind of a thoughtful way? Over the past few years, ESPN.com has been the main source for this kind of commentary on a national scale, as far as I know. But as anyone who has the same addiction as I does know, most of the best columnists and the best material is now on Insider, which is the paid portion of the site. And it's very, I think, annoying to most sports fans I know that this information is being created and it's not out there. There's that little orange icon by it that says, you can't see this. So, and nothing else has really stepped up to fill the gap. There are other national sports sites like CNNSI.com, Fox Sports, etc. None of them really have the penetration. There's, specialty sites for particular teams or sports in hometown newspapers. And none of them have really, filled the void at kind of like a national kind of commentary columnist level. So what the idea I had is that I know a lot of people who, waste a lot of their time in the same way that I do, write the same kinds of, either in blog or email form, pieces of material, arguments, that are only a few edits away from being columns. It's done, for non-market motives, kind of just for fun. But what I had the idea is that an aggregator of this kind of writing with a small amount of editing and a large enough reach could become a destination site to kind of rival that particular portion of what people have been, I think, increasingly frustrated in not finding at sports like sites like ESPN and its competitors. Let's see, about 2.5 minutes. Should I stop now or look into the arguments why this might not work? Wait, which I'm not sure which of those sounds good, so I'll just opt for the latter. So some of the reasons why this might not work, as far as access goes, we don't have access, we can't interview the coaches, players, managers, etc. I don't think that's a particularly big problem because most of the columns aren't dependent on this, and those that are, like Peter Gammons' baseball columns, are on Insider anyway. There is no other content on the site, and that is, I think, a problem as far as being a destination. Most people go to these sites for scores or recaps, highlights, or whatever, and then play around with the commentary. For that reason, I think an RSS-style delivery method would probably be better than having it just be a site that people go to periodically. You know, it would be a volunteer project, so there's issues of time and how long can the motivation last. I think, again, that is a problem. I think the implication of that is that it would have a short time window from when it starts to when it would have to gain some level of popularity out, some level of exposure outside of, you know, the immediate circles of the people creating this content. In, at which point, if that were to happen, you know, the notoriety would become its own reward. And also by soliciting contributions from readers, because this is a, you know, an amateur freelance kind of setup, it would also make it easier to generate content. And as my big ending, I'm going to ask anybody who is interested in either contributing material or possibly helping in the web design or something of a project like this, please email me so we can get this project going. Thank you.
So who are you empathizing with there?
Who am I empathizing with? I am empathizing with, I guess, frustrated sports fans of America.
That's you. That's not your opposition.
Okay, well, my opposition, I guess, would be people who, I guess, you know, just think that a project like this can't work, you know, for the reasons that, you know, sports writing has to be done in a more professional format. And I think that's probably true as far as a lot of, like, straight reporting goes, because you do need the access, you do need to be able to get there and have, like, the press credentials to be where things are happening.
But as I was listening to you, it seemed to me you have an enterprise in mind. And in order for your enterprise to succeed, you merely need to persuade the people who are your potential writers that this is a good enough idea for them to get off their seats and connect with you. So, in fact, the mass audience is largely irrelevant to you in this. The people you're trying to move are your fellow sports fanatics with writing talent that would like to somehow, those are the ones you want?
I would say there's probably two audiences I'm looking for. One is kind of the smaller audience of people who would see themselves as potential contributors. And I'd say the other audience is just kind of the audience, which, I mean, there's a lot of crossover between the two, of people who would be interested in reading material like this. I mean, I think, you know, one thing that you do get from an ESPN or Sports Illustrated or whatever is, you know, there's kind of a credential there. It's like, you know, at least go in, you feel, you know, okay, these people are good writers. I'm not reading something by, you know, Joe Schmo in Connecticut who likes writing about the Red Sox and is going to, like, write a 10-page thing about that. You know, so I think I think the keys to that is, you know, one, you know, just having quality content that, you know, you have a look at it, you know, by between editing and getting good writers, you generate something that, you know, people will see the
again,
first
time. Again, I'm not so interested in the substance of the argument.
Okay.
But the structure of it, that is, who are you trying to move? And what is holding them back? And can you empathize with them so you understand what's holding them back and articulate your position in relationship to them so that they're willing to move? That's what you want. And it's got, in a sense, the same problems that we were talking about with Martha's Vineyard, where in order to move, you have to be the guy that stands up and says, you know, I'm proud and I'm free in the 303 or whatever it was. And at the same time, you have to be offering them the reason to come towards you. You have to be solving the problem of recognizing them and giving them some reason for moving towards you. And that's the structure of the argument that we're looking at. And I would love for us to be reaching for it, whether it's Martha's Vineyard or it's sports or it's parked cars or whatever it is. That's the meta structure that I'm trying to get at in terms of empathic argument. So thank you very much. That was wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's good.
Do it, hopefully. just an image representation. Can I write?
Are you ready to? Uh-huh. Okay, great. Can you turn that power on?
Take this one.
Switch.
There we go.
Got it?
Yep.
Yeah. Can everyone close their eyes? Imagine that you're a father in Mexico, and you've taken all your money and time to migrate to California. You've left three of your children back behind in Mexico, and you're working very hard as a janitor to try to scrape up $5,000 per child to try to bring them over to you. Now imagine that in order to get them to California to you, they need to travel with coyotes, as they're called, to be smuggled into the country alone without anyone but the coyotes. Now imagine that you're a mother from Romania and you have a husband who beats you. He's threatened to kill and stab you, and you also have three children. And you hear from someone after you fled your husband and left your three kids with their grandmother that there's a job in Germany and that they'll give you papers to get over there. So you leave your kids temporarily, and while en route you realize you're actually not going to Germany, but you're going to Kosovo, where you're going to be a prostitute. You can open your eyes. The point of me even saying these things is that legally, there's a distinction between smuggling and trafficking in this country and internationally. Trafficking is seen as something that you're forced to do, where you've been coerced, maybe even abducted. Smuggling is seen as something that you've given up your consent and you've agreed to do. And I think this is a very arbitrary legal fiction that is really hurting people. The bottom line is that trafficked people are taken care of. They're allowed to go back to their country, or even allowed to stay. Smuggled people are arrested and deported. This is wrong. Because truly, this distinction comes from a place of privilege, I think Western privilege. And it's this idea of quote-unquote choice. But really and truly, where is the choice? Now, I know that the government would argue we don't want to create an incentive for illegal immigration. But I think that, and I know actually, that smuggling has become a booming $10 million industry. And the reason why is because of our increased border rules make it very expensive and actually almost attractive for coyotes to put out their names and to bring people over. We need to think together of a way, policymakers and those who are in positions, to really protect people and children who are being smuggled / trafficked, which I think there is no difference, through the borders. And that's it. People who are being trafficked or smuggled.
But the idea here is to empathize with the person who opposes you.
Oh,
so
who's
opposing you here?
Policymakers.
The policymakers. Mm-hmm. And why are you thinking that the policymakers care about the hearts and flowers part of the sympathy for the children or the mother or the this or the that?
Because they're human.
We're talking about congressmen.
Right. But
if that's who you're imagining as your opponent.
Right. Policymakers and obviously the community at large, who are the constituents of policymakers.
Oh, yes. I have 5 seconds. It's a hard argument that you're making to fit into the empathic form that I'm trying to illustrate, because you don't see the opponent as, well, I'd have to work at it. I'd have to figure out who are the opponents to eliminating the distinction between trafficking and smuggling, and why do they really care, and what would move them? Where are they coming from? How did they get into the position they were in? But those are the kinds of questions that I would urge you to ask of yourself as you're thinking about this argument. And we got to end it.
So we're at the end of class. I'd like to thank Colin and our four very brave volunteers who got up and did this for all of us. And also say to all of you that your podcasts will be due, meaning uploaded on our blog, next Monday. That's for law students and extension students. And I'm really looking forward to subscribing to this podcast. So let's thank our volunteers and Colin.
Thank you very much, Colin.
Thank you.